Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Oh, everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking to the wonderful Catherine Russell, who has had an incredibly rich background in music. Her legendary father, the late Louis Russell, was Louis Armstrong's musical director. She has been the background singer and collaborator for David Bowie, Steely Dan, Jackson Browne, Paul Simon, Dolly Parton, and so many more. She's also an incredible jazz musician. Her sixth album, Harlem on My Mind, received a Grammy nomination. As you can imagine, Kat has incredibly dazzling stories to share, and you'll hear some of them on this episode. For example, what it was like for her to sing alongside David Bowie night after night, and why working with Dolly Parton was one of her all-time favorite experiences. But to me, she is the person who taught me how to sing the blues in college, who helped me move through my first real heartbreak, and the woman who continues to mentor and care for me through life's challenges. She's still one of my all-time favorite people to sit down with over a cup of tea and talk about life. I'm so grateful that in this episode, you get to hear a little bit about both these parts of Catherine, the unique musical experiences that she's had, but also the human experiences that she still works through. Because Catherine has taught me so much about life and music, I thought it was fitting to have her as our first artist in the mentor series of this podcast. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy this episode.
Hello.
Hi, Kat. It's Monse.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
We've got some dogs in the background. So they're like, what's going on? I'm staying at
what's
my...
What's in the background?
Some puppies barking.
Puppies?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just so you know. All right, Kat. Well, I just wanted to start off by having you talk a little bit about your incredible life story. And before maybe diving into what you're currently doing and all that, you can maybe tell me a little bit about your musical lineage and sort of just where you came from with your dad and mom being, you know, very prominent people in the music world.
Well, my father, Louis Russell, came from Panama. In 1921, and came to New Orleans with his mother and his sister. He had been playing piano for silent films in Colon, in Panama. And, you know, and the place to go was New Orleans in those days for really the beginnings of jazz. So then he ended up, you know, Louis Armstrong was one of the people that he met when he got to New Orleans, as well as Bonnie Bigard and all kinds of other great musicians. And he ended up studying arranging and forming his own orchestras, working with, you know, very prominent New Orleans musicians and musicians that worked with the great trumpeter King Oliver, Joe King Oliver, who was legendary in those days. Then he went from there to, from New Orleans to Chicago to New York, which a lot of musicians did in those days, and then ended up with forming his own big band, his own orchestra, which was very prominent in the late 20s in Harlem. And so then he ended up also working with Louis Armstrong from 1935 to about 1942 or three. And it was my father's orchestra whom Louis Armstrong fronted in those days, which became Louis Armstrong and his orchestra. And then reformed his own orchestra, Louis Russell's orchestra, in the 40s. And that was the last thing that he did in the music business. And then he retired from the business. And my mother, Carlene Ray, went to Juilliard School of Music, and then from there, in the 1940s, joined the all-female jazz orchestra, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm, which was during the Second World War, and where female musicians became more prominent because the men were all at war. Now, when the men came back, then a lot of the women lost their jobs and different things like that. And so my mother spent maybe 50 years, 60 years as a freelance bass player, guitar player, and vocalist, and worked with many orchestras, and including Duke Ellington Orchestra, fronted by his son, Mercer Ellington, and Skitch Henderson Orchestra, all kinds of different things. She worked with Max Roach. She worked with a variety of vocalists. She worked in the studios in New York, did a lot of session work, and taught at many different schools in her long career. And then in later years, when she was in her 80s, I produced an album for her called Vocal Sides that was just her singing different songs that she really loved. And so, you know, she had a very long and successful life. My dad had a very, he didn't live as long, but his life was full. So that's my, those are my parents.
It's pretty incredible. You know, both of them, their stories. I mean, it was like right from the start when you were just a little girl, you were just right in it. So it's no surprise that you've turned out to be what you're doing, you know? I wonder, there's a picture of you and Louis Armstrong. It's just like the best. I love it so much. It's so sweet. And when you were a little girl, and what did he mean to you during that time in your life?
He was a very dear friend of my dad. They were very good friends throughout both of their careers. And so even after my father retired from the business, they remained friends until Louis Armstrong's death, until my dad's death in 1963. And so that photo is taken at the at their home in Corona, Queens, which is now the Louis Armstrong House Museum. And that was that evening. They had a party, Louis and Lucille. And I think that I was the only child there. I don't remember any other children there. But Louis Armstrong was always very nice to me. He loved children, obviously, you know, from all the photos that you see of him and the kids in the neighborhood there. And so I think at one point he just wanted to pick me up, you know, and I thought, wow, okay, this is a little overwhelming for me at that point. I was 4 years old, but, and I remember that vividly. And, so, you know, so, but he was very nice, you know, so, and a good friend to people. So that's what I remember about him.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about our friendship and what you've meant to me over the years. So you were my voice teacher at Berklee College of Music. And, you know, you were so much more than that to me, too. You were just like an emotional anchor for me. I remember, you know, college, especially freshman year, was just like, you know, it's a hard time of transition. And I was going through a lot of emotional stuff. And I just remember you would, you know, stay after class to work with me on a song. And I remember doing Joni Mitchell songs with you. And but then also, you know, if I was having going through a heartbreak or whatnot, you know, you would just really be there for me in this really special, profound way. And I just wondered if you could tell me a little bit about where that generosity of time and care comes from. Like if you've ever had someone in your life that has been that for you.
Huh. Interesting. That's a new question. Well, first of all, you know, I loved working with you, and you have, you know, so much heart and soul and passion for everything that you do. So that is, you know, when you meet someone that has, you know, they're going to be successful at whatever they do because they're passionate and sensitive and not afraid to you know, to live in that, live within that. That, you know, you weren't trying to stuff it down. You were experiencing whatever you went through. So that is essential to being an artist, you know, and any of the creative arts, you know, which are tough, you know, because you're dealing with emotions all the time. So
yes,
I would say that my mother was not raised that way. So she, you know, my grandfather was not a very sensitive individual. So I loved him, but, you know, not kind of stern, you know. So she picked that up from him. And so we were not alike in that way. So I, from a young age, probably in my teens, I was pursuing different ways of learning how to get to know myself better, you know, as a person, because, you know, I didn't have a hard shell. So I had to find out that was okay. You know, it was okay to be like that. So I studied acting, which really helped. I went to acting school in New York City, and had directors and teachers who were understanding of that type of thing, you know, of sensitivity and learning who you are and having it be okay to be emotional. So so through teaching, that kind of developed in me, you know. Teaching, I love teaching. Teaching has been very good for me because I met some excellent people, yourself at the top of that list, that, you know, I'm able to be, you know, cultivate friendships with and, you know, go through life with. You know, we see what each other's doing. And so, you know, I was your teacher at one point, but now we're just human beings out here in the world, you know. So
right.
It's very satisfying for me. And also, if you don't, if you're not okay with your emotions and how you feel about things and how you navigate through that, then it's very hard to create anything, because then you're always critical.
Yes.
Of yourself. And so, and I also had an excellent teacher and mentor for 10 years who is actually lives in England, but he'd come over and teach us. And so I learned through him meditation, and I learned how to, you know, what all the things were that I was telling myself to inhibit my own growth as an artist, you know. So I was in classes with this person for 10 straight years and just dredged up all that stuff that we hate to look at, and, you know, what my parents did to me and emotional pain, you know, all mm-hmm. kinds of things, emotional scars and all that stuff. So we looked at everything. And so I have techniques to deal with all of those things and have those be okay, so that, you know, you're not tied like a chain to these things, so that you can use those things, use those emotions, and use who you are as a person, who I am as a person, to my advantage as an artist, rather than have it inhibit me and have it be a separate thing. So, you know, compassion is very important, because we all have our struggles. You know, it doesn't matter our social classes, race, whatever it is, we all have, you know, our struggles. So that is one thing that my mother did raise me with, that, you know, we're just human beings. And so it really doesn't matter, you know, where you come from or what your parents did or whatever it is. Everybody has a core of struggle that they're trying to overcome.
Absolutely.
You know, as people.
Yeah. And some people are just more, you know, confronting it directly, and others are, like you said, stuffing it down, you know, and just thinks that as you get older, you sort of realize how important it is to really learn how to unpack it all and to move through it, you know, because that's the only way out, you know, to get through it.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you can help other people help you.
Yes.
Through these things. And, you know, I learned a lot taking care of my mother in her declining years, because then she really had to be vulnerable. You know, there was no choice, because she was not well. So it was very interesting to see what happened with her emotionally toward the end of her life. And we actually, got a bit closer as human beings in that period of time. So that was really eye-opening for me.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. I wanted to also, we didn't mention this before, but because we were talking more about your parents, but you've had an incredible career in the jazz world, but then you've also been a backup singer for a number of very prominent artists, one of them being David Bowie. And I remember when he passed away that you immediately came to mind, and I texted you and make sure you're okay. And I knew how much he meant to you. And I wondered if, you know, besides the music part and, you know, how you collaborated with him, if you could tell us a little bit about what he meant to you just as a person and what you loved most about him.
Okay. So David Bowie really had a lot of respect for the musicians that he worked with throughout the years. So the way he ran the band was that we were a band, and it wasn't just us backing him up. So we rehearsed really 6 days a week for a few months before we go out on tour. And he'd leave the band in the morning to rehearse, so we'd go in and work on maybe 5-6 tunes at a time. And then he'd come in the afternoon, having worked on his part of the show, and then we'd try things together. So, and if something didn't work, we'd say, well, this is really not working. And there were a million other songs to choose from, because there are no bad ones, you know, with him. And he was very nice, gracious. He was a gentleman. You know, he liked to laugh. He was always, you know, really liked to travel with the band. And he was just, you know, it was an unbelievable experience, because I never thought I would get. I was a fan of his. For, you know, from 1970 on, 71, whenever Ziggy Stardust came out. And so I couldn't really believe when he walked through the door, and I thought, gee, you know, that really is David Bowie. You know?
Right.
And so the first thing he did was come over and thank me. You know, I was behind my keyboards, and he came over and thanked me for doing the gig. And I said, I was speechless. I said, to thank me, thank you, you know.
Aww.
And so it was a very intense and incredible time. I got to sing a lot of duets with him, and you know, the band was a family. You know, we looked after each other on the road, and you know, all of that stuff comes down from the boss. You know, so we really were a close knit unit, and really enjoyed working together and working with him, and just singing all those iconic songs every show, a lot of which I knew already. So it was just a joy for me to work on them and get deeper into them, you know, from the inside. So it was a great, great experience. I can't even describe, you know, how fortunate I feel to have done that.
That's so, so wonderful. And yeah, it just, from over the years hearing about him, it just sounds like the essence of him, which is really beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, beautiful physically, beautiful personally, everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, who is, you've collaborated with so many artists, besides David Bowie, you know, who is someone who just like comes to mind of, you know, that's just been a really special collaboration and kind of like another one of those I can't believes.
Well, I've been working with off and on with Steely Dan for the last 25 years, and I still am. And Donald Fagen, I met Donald Fagen in 1989, I think. And there was a band in New York called A Little Big Band, which Jimmy Vivino, who was head of the Conan O'Brien band for the last, I don't know, 25 years or something like that, which just ended, the music portion of it just ended at anyway. But Jimmy, I met Jimmy really in 1985 working with Joan Osborne, and then met him again when he was leading this band, and I was working at Catch a Rising Star Comedy Club, singing between comics. And then the drummer, they had a trio that used to play the comics on and off, you know. And in between the comics, they had a few of us singers that would do our little 15 minutes, you know. And so the drummer in that band was also in this band that was backing up different people, Phoebe Snow and Donald Fagen. And it was all kinds of folks that used to come in, notable people that used to come into this club called Hades. And so Donald, one night I ended up on stage next to him. And I was just singing blues because I didn't know what else to really sit in with a band with, you know. And so, and then I stuck with the band. Jimmy said, well, okay, great, come on back, you know. And then we just started working together. And then after that, Donald Fagen hired me to do his Rock and Soul Review shows. And I did also, his wife, Libby Titus, had a series called New York Nights, which was at the Lone Star Roadhouse. So I was part of that as well, which was a kind of a weekly or monthly series that had different guests, Chaka Khan and Charles Brown and Ruth Brown and a lot of different folks. And so from there, from all these bands, that turned into the Rock and Soul Tour in 1992 with Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald and Chuck Jackson and Phoebe Snow. And then went on to, when Steely Dan reformed and started touring in 1993, I was part of that. So Donald Fagen has been, you know, my friend and one of my mentors, and just suggesting, he's continually suggesting tunes, you know, to me, because I'm always looking for material to record. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, just a musicologist, knows about all kinds of music, you know, everything from soul to funk to rock to everything, you know, all about jazz and blues, everything. So he has just been, you know, another one, a person that's been in my life for maybe half of my life, you know. And, you know, also Cyndi Lauper, you know, I've toured with her back in the 90s, and she's still a, you know, very dear friend. And I just saw her a few months back, and she's doing great. And I worked with Jackson Brown for 5 years, thanks to his keyboardist, Jeff Young, who was another friend of mine for 30 years, and suggested me to come in to do that gig. So I was Jackson's, one of his backup singers and percussionists for that period of time, about 2003 to 2008. So all of these folks, you know, have been important in my life. And, you know, Paul Simon is another person whom I worked with back in the early 90s, who still, if I run into Paul somewhere, he'll say, hi, Catherine, like no time has passed, you know. So all of these folks are real, you know, they're human beings. They're out here doing their thing. You know, they're still writing. They're still going, you know, they're not, you know, they're real people, right, you know, with real goals and real artistic, you know. Elvis Costello, you know, got to share the stage with him. You know, these are like iconic individuals, you know. So I've been very fortunate and blessed to, have worked with these folks.
Absolutely. Well, and they're also blessed to have worked with you, because I know how special you are. So,
yeah,
you know,
I appreciate that.
It's the truth. But yeah, I love that you're just getting to the core of it, that, you know, that they are iconic artists, but they're also just people, you know. And and like, I love that you mentioned earlier about, you know, that all of us, no matter who we are, struggle. And if you're willing to, I'd love to hear a little bit about what particular struggles you've had to grapple with over the years. You know, since we all sort of have our main things, you know, that are kind of like our constant companions, you know, like for me, it's anxiety. And I'm wondering if there's anything you could talk about that you've had to kind of really work through.
Well, without going, you know, into like a psychologist session.
Right. We could totally do that. I know.
We don't have that much time,
right,
but
right.
I would say, you know, I would say that when I was prepubescent, I was happier, you know. So puberty really did a number on me, you know. It just kind of stomped all over me, and I didn't get over it for a lot of years, you know. Just my, you know, challenging, not thinking that I was attractive. My mother was a very good-looking woman, you know. So that was a one thing, and she always told me I looked like my dad. So, you know, that was, you know. So
just for the record, you're beautiful.
Thanks. Well, you know, just getting over a lot of that kind of jealousy of what I thought were beautiful women, and you know, what happened to me and all this kind of stuff. And you know, I've always been physically active, so that part of it, you know, I've been able to, because I exercise every day, and I really like to keep my body in good shape. You know, that did go to seed there for a few years in my teens. When I moved out to California and discovered burritos and tacos and things like that, and beer, you know, so that kind of blew up there for a few years, and then took that weight off, and because I was a dancer first, and then, you know, stopped dancing when my teacher left the States, you know, so I just wasn't competitive in that way. So that's another thing. I'm, you know, not competitive. I'm competitive with myself, but not with other people so much, you know. So I like to do my best, but I'm not going to cut your throat to get ahead. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of all of those things, standing up for myself, really being honest with my feelings, you know, as we were talking about earlier, and really standing up for how I was going to get ahead and make a living as a musician, you know, as an artist. So I tried doing it as an actress first.
Right.
And figured, yeah, that wasn't going to pay me as much money as I needed. And I wasn't any certain type. I was too old for this, too young for that. You know, at that point in my life, there weren't as many roles for Black people as there are now. You know, you have all the television roles and all kinds of different roles that we can play these days. That was not the case in the, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So, you know, just kind of grappling with really how was I going to get ahead and make and just do something for my, be a citizen that contributes to the world. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and how
using your art,
how to
yeah.
do yeah and how to do that. I mean, you know, you have a talent, but how do you gain confidence and all of these types of things? So music has really helped me to really get to know myself better, and to take care of my body, and to learn how to act on the road, and how to take care of me, how to travel, what to ask for, not to be afraid to ask for things that I need, because my mother always raised me, you know, don't make waves, don't draw attention to yourself, don't make trouble, don't do this. So all of those things that you might learn from your folks, you know, they grew up in a different era. So having to navigate all those voices in my head with how I was going to, you know, fully grow as a person, took a long time. You know, how was I going to gain the confidence to be the person I need to be there for myself,
yep.
as far as the growth that I, you know, as far as the job that I need, if somebody calls me to do something, how am I going to handle that emotionally? You know? So, you know, music has really helped that. And also the training that I was mentioning that I took from my teacher, over 10 years, my acting teacher, that really helped me to weed out all the crap that I tell myself, the reasons that I won't succeed, and just go ahead on and, you know, do what I need to do, to succeed.
Yeah.
From day to day.
It's just amazing, isn't it? How, you know, the things that we hear and learn as children just get lodged in our body, and it takes a lot to undo that, you know? So, I don't know. I think that's that's
Well, it takes you taking on another person's fears and things. You know, like you taking on. So when somebody tells you something, it's coming from them. They have the best intentions, but it's their own stuff that, you know, then you have to go, oh, well, how do I navigate that? Maybe that's not me. You
that's
know?
Right. And when you're a little girl, you just don't know. You don't like understand that, you know? So it's just.
No. Yeah. No. So, you know, and then there are also hormonal issues that women go through that, you know, I had some health issues that I didn't realize were reasons for my mood swings and things like that. So, and you learn about that. Nobody tells you that in school. You don't learn that. You have to get sick first and then say, oh, what is this? And then get help for that, you know? So, you know, it's just different physical issues that come up as a woman, that we are really not fully trained to deal with. So,
yep, totally.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, I want to ask you like one or two more questions. One being, and you've sort of already mentioned this in general, can you tell me what's in your personal toolkit to help you move through a hard day or a month or a year?
Exercise. And trying to stay even tempered and really breaking down, as you say, unpacking what it is, what do I want right now? What is the moment to moment unpacking of why is my mind racing, you know, or what do? I need to just sit down and breathe for 10 minutes. Have I eaten enough today? You know, what do I need right now? And so if we go moment to moment, I feel like that, helps focus, and it helps just break down the overwhelm of too much stuff all at one time. So if you can write things down, you know, I have to write things down because there's always a lot going on. So I have lists which get dangerous after a while if I don't, you know, take care of those things. But you know, I'm a visual person, so I have to see what's in front of me in order to take care of it so that my mind doesn't race. So before I go to sleep at night, if there are things I have to take care of the next day, I write them down.
I do that too. See, so yeah, it really helps. It really to get it out of your head. And on paper, just something about that just completely takes away the anxiety of it.
Yeah.
It's like you feel like you have it under control somehow, you know?
Well, then I don't have to, it doesn't have to stay on my mind. It's on the paper. So I know I've written it down. And then, you know, if I'm having insomnia, I will clear my mind by listening. Mm. So, and then I can go back to sleep. So that's a technique that, you know, works for me. So because I can't take any, you know, anxiety, I can't take any sleep medications or anything like that.
I had a terrible I don't know if I ever told you about this, but I took, what's the main one? Is it Ambien?
Ambien, yeah.
Yeah, like, because my doctor was like, I was going on a flight to Argentina an overnight.
Oh, man.
And she was like, oh, yeah, just take this. You know, you'll sleep right away. And I had like a total panic attack on the airplane. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Never again.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody gave me Ambien once and I said, okay, that's that. I can't.
Right.
No, you know, and it was on the tour bus and I ended up on the floor. Like,
oh,
you know,
man.
Just cause,
yeah, that cause stuff is
not,
dangerous.
You know, yeah, it is. So I just, I don't take anything on the plane. You know, what I've learned is when I fly now that in-flight entertainment has gotten a lot better.
Yes.
That if I put on an action picture, you know, one of those Marvel pictures, a lot of action, just stuff that I don't have to, it looks nice and it's just action packed. That puts me right to sleep.
Oh, that's so funny. I love it. Okay. I'm going to try that next time.
So you just have to find something on the plane, and you know that'll put you to sleep. That's
the trick.
You know, I don't know why, but you know, Star Wars, all that kind of stuff. I go right to sleep on the plane. So.
Love it. I'm gonna try it. See if that works for me. Oh man. All right, Kat. Well, I just want to end by asking you a couple of your favorite things. So could you tell me a favorite book of yours?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I don't get to read that much, unfortunately, but I read mostly biographies.
Yes.
And I'm going to walk over here to my bookshelf for a second.
Yep. I do the same thing. And, like, what am I reading again? What did I read?
And let's see. There was a book on the, one of my favorite books is Rage to Survive, which is Etta James' autobiography that she wrote with the great writer David Ritz. That is a fit because I like to know about people. So
yes, me too.
That is a great book for, she's great at self-analysis. So that's a really fabulous book, and it's just unbelievable, her life story. And you know, usually I'm reading about African Americans and our history, because it's amazing to me how we survived in this country,
of course,
and the ways that we had to live, and that really we didn't know many years ago if we were going to live another day. You know, you might end up in the wrong place, kind of like Emmett Till. You know that story. You know, you end up the wrong place at the wrong time, and then they kill you. So this is what we've, a lot of. People of other ethnicities don't understand about our history. So I like to read about my own folks. And so there's also a Billie Holiday biography.
Yes, I remember you recommend that to me.
John Zwed, who's a great writer. Then I read Billy Eckstein's biography, which was really also fantastic. And the biography of the great rhythm and blues singer Little Willie John. Then, of course, I've read a bunch about Louis Armstrong, including Ricky Riccardi's book, What a Wonderful World, which is Louis Armstrong about his later years. And that's an excellent read. And then also, let me see here. Now you got me started here.
I love these are great recommendations.
And then a couple of years ago, we did a show dedicated to Ralph Ellison, to the great writer Ralph Ellison. And so I got Invisible Man and then his short stories. So he's also an excellent, of course, iconic writer. So this is what I read. You know, when I have the time to read a book, and I take books with me on the plane, or on a trip, this is really what I love to read. Yeah, about people's lives. I read a couple of Judy Garland biographies, and so it's not only black people. It's just basically people in show business and just interesting intellectual people like Ralph Ellison and their take on life, you know, in America and life in show business and how people are treated in America and overseas, you know, like the differences between, you know, how we're treated here and there. So
that's my very favorite too. And I'm sure have you read some Patti Smith?
No, I haven't read that yet. And I heard that was excellent.
I'm like, so Catherine, you're going to love it.
That's also on my list.
Okay,
start
with Just Kids and then M-Train.
I'm a Patti Smith fan. So, I just haven't gotten there yet.
Okay,
but
I
plan to read that.
Good. And then we'll talk about it.
And in between, you know, years ago, I read a lot of, Shelton, what's his name? Jesus, Bloodline. His books were made into films, and Sidney Sheldon.
Oh yeah,
I read probably all of the stuff that he wrote, because I love that kind of murder mystery, mm-hmm. thing, you know, read a lot of Agatha Christie and all that stuff. So, and then Octavia Butler, who's a black science fiction writer. And, of course, Isaac Asimov. So I like to be transported when I read something, you know.
Yeah.
So I generally, regular fiction really isn't my thing. So I like science fiction or biographies or historical stuff.
Love it. Cool. All right. So how about this is going to be a very loaded question, but how about a favorite album or song that comes to mind?
Well, what genre?
I know. Yeah, narrowing it down. How about something first in the jazz world and then something in any other genre?
Favorite song. You know, it's easier for me to say like a favorite artist.
Sure, go for it.
So I would, you know, because I like everything from George Jones and Patsy Cline to, you know, Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday to, you know, Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra, you know, Ray Charles, Elvis Costello. You know, Elvis Costello has a song called Clown Strike, and which I love. The clowns were going to strike, you know, like he writes about everything. So, you know, Neil Young, you know, I love, gosh, you know, just there's, I listen to songs, different songs, just, you know, for a mood, you know, the mood that I'm in type of thing. So I might put on, you know, Patsy Cline tune just because I love her voice so much. And, you know, and then of course, you know, Louis Armstrong, Kiss to Build a Dream On, and just about any, you know, most Louis Armstrong, you know, or, in the wee small hours, Frank Sinatra, I can listen to him forever,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's really, we just went to hear, my husband and I just went to hear the Byrds the other week, the Sweetheart of the Rodeo tour, which was fantastic. Roger McGuinn, you know, so I can, you know, the Byrds Untitled album was one of my favorite rock albums. And Chestnut Mare was a song about a horse that I just loved, you know.
Awesome.
You know, I love bluegrass. You know, I love traditional Irish and traditional American string band music. So, you know, it's I love classical music. So, you know, one of my favorite classical pieces is a Tombeau de Couperin by Maurice Ravel, and forgive my horrible French accent. but that's, you know, it just depends. You know, I love Baroque music. Just depends on, you know, what mood I'm in. So.
That makes total sense.
That's tough.
Yeah. It's a tough question. I know. It's it's hard to pick one. So, okay. How about a favorite memory?
A favorite memory. Let's see. A favorite memory. I'm trying to think of maybe a celebrity that I've met or...
You probably have so many incredible memories.
Well, there was one where, let's see, I was somewhere, I was in the atrium of Madison Square Garden or something like that, and there was an event going on there, and I was in one band. Paul Simon was about to play in another room somewhere, and we were just kind of like a warm-up act or something for something, so... Paul, I said hello to Paul Simon, and he says, oh, come on back in the dressing room. So I go back in his dressing room, and then I hear a voice over my shoulder, and a person was saying, you know, man's voice, is there somewhere, you know, I don't have a dressing room, is there somewhere I can sit? And I turn around, it's Tony Bennett.
Oh, wow. oh, man.
You know, so these types of things, you know, I mean...
That's your world,
that, you know,
yeah.
yeah, like people that you know, it's Tony Bennett for crying out loud, you know, like the people
looking for
that
a dressing room.
yeah, just don't think I'm ever gonna, you know, meet. I mean, I don't know. I got to work with Suzanne Vega on one of her albums a few years back, which was a great experience. I never thought I'd, you know, get to work with her. Jerry Leonard, who was plays for guitar for, with many people, but was David Bowie's, one of his guitar players at that point, and was Cyndi Lauper's guitar player at one point, which is how we met 20 years ago, asked me to come in and do a bunch of vocal background vocals on her album. And that was, she was so nice and sweet. That was just a great, you know, it's nice when you meet celebrities and they're nice, you know?
Yep.
So,
totally.
You know, oh, well, one of my favorite experiences was, you know, working with Dolly Parton a few years back on a promotional, she's just the best, you know, on some promotional gigs that she was doing up here in New York for an album. And so she hired a bunch of New York musicians and singers. And so she came in, when she came into the rehearsal room where we all were, she said hello to everyone by name.
Wow.
And shook everybody's hand. So she had studied that before she got into the room.
That's amazing.
And shook everybody's hand, looked you in the eye and said, hello. Hello, Catherine. Hello, whomever. We did like the Today Show, which is very early in the morning. So it's like a 4 a.m. call type of thing. She had a hot breakfast for us. They don't feed you hot breakfast on those shows. So she made sure that we had a hot breakfast.
Wow.
And she sent us. That year, it was maybe in the fall. And so one day before, during the holiday season, before Christmas, I get a knock on the door, and it was a delivery of this little kind of Christmas tree ornament thing that she sent to everybody just to put under your tree.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and to say thank you. And then she gave us a DVD of all of the shows that we had done with her so that we have that.
Wow.
Memory. Who does that?
What
Nobody
a person.
Does that.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Nobody does that.
Wow.
And then at one point we were sitting and she invited us, the girls, you know, that were singing background for her, into her dressing room. So we were sitting in there with her, you know, and they came to the door. These people, I don't know, people with the show. We were on the Country Music Awards or something like that. So they came in to give her this big basket of stuff, you know, the fruit and, you know, just stuff that they give you, you know, promotional things. So, and they didn't speak to us. They just spoke to her. So she said, oh, thank you very much. She closed the door. She said, she got down on the floor. She said, look, here, I'm going to give you, I don't need all this stuff. I'm going to give you, what do you need? You got a dog? Here's dog crackers. Here, take this. Here, girl, she wants this. And I mean, she is the sweetest.
Wow.
The sweetest, most real person, because when we were doing this show, I know I'm going on and on, but we were doing this Today Show. I noticed her shoes because she has all of her clothes and shoes made for her, you know. So I asked her about her shoes because they reminded me of little Barbie shoes, like the shoes that I used to put on my Barbie doll when I was a kid.
Yep.
And they're like stilettos, but they have a platform on them. So she stopped what she was doing to explain to me who the man was who made these shoes for her. The woman stopped. We were like doing a taping and it was like 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
And she stopped to answer me. Like, who does that?
That's so heartwarming to just hear. That's nice that people like that exist, you know?
Yeah. So yeah. She's really sweet, you know? So it's nice, you know, when people are really sweet and you know, Kelly Ripa is another nice person. Very nice.
She seems
done,
so
done
sweet.
That show.
Yeah,
very, very nice. And she's always, you know, the few times I've done that show, she's always come up to us. I always wanted to be a backup singer. I love you guys. You know, you guys are great. So, you know.
That's so cute. Oh, I love it. Oh, that's so.
So that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's fun, you know, when you can, you know, when people are nice, it's, you know, you just realize, oh, they're just working. You know, they're the high level, high intelligence people, but they're, you know, highly intelligent folks, but it's working. They're working very hard, you know?
Yeah. And they're just being human and kind. And that, I mean, it's so simple, right? But it's such a profound thing. You know, I think it gets lost in a lot of us. So I noticed that, you know, like just a small act of kindness can turn your whole day around, you know, like, this just came to mind because like last weekend, I was in line with, going to get myself a matcha latte. And the guy, it was a really long line. And the guy in front of me, he just looked like he was kind of having a bad day. And when he went up to order after waiting for so long, they didn't have what he wanted. And he was like, oh man, oh, really? And I don't remember what I said to him, but I was just sort of joking around with him. And then he started laughing. And then he bought me my matcha and said, you know, I just was having a really bad day and you were just so nice. And it really brightened my day. And I just thought, yeah, how, and then it brightened my day that he, you know, bought me my matcha. And just thought, I think about that often, about how like just a simple act of kindness can go so far.
Yeah. And I think most people, you know, when in my travels really feel that way. You know, people get fearful of other people because of what we hear in the news and all this kind of thing. But when you travel around, you know, I meet a lot of really great people. So, and, you know, we a lot of us really do want the same things. We want, courtesy and kindness and just, you know, the simple things. So it is nice. That's, you know, is important to me. You know, like in New York, you have these kinds of exchanges because it's a town where things happen on the street, you know. So, New York kind of gets a bad rap for, you know, being a hard city and all that. But if something happens to someone on the street, people will stop to help them, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I've witnessed that and been a part of that many times in New York. An elderly person will fall down or something will happen to someone. They'll get sick and people will stay there with that person and wait for the ambulance and to make sure they're okay before they move on with their day. Or people ask me for directions all the time, you know. So if I have the time, I will take them to wherever they need to go so they don't get lost, you know, because then especially now during the holiday season, a lot of tourists and people just, you know, can't find their way and stuff like that. They're looking for the tree in Rockefeller Center or whatever, you know. And so, you know, they're just that does help. It does help the overall feeling. Then you get home, you say, "Gee, you know, the world actually can work."
Yeah, makes a big difference. Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, so those of us that can, you know.
Yes. Well, I just love your beautiful heart, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. And I hope I get to see you really soon.
Yeah. Well, we'll make that happen. Yes. We'll plan that out. And you'll let me know where you are, and then just I'll get in touch with you. You get in touch with me, and we'll make that happen.
I love you so much, Kat. Thank you so much.
I love you too, Monty. You know I love you. It's been many, many years.
I know.
Many, many years now.
You're like my auntie, you know? My sister, my friend. You're everything to me.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You're my daughter, my sister, my mentee, we get together and have our meal or our tea or whatever we do and commune and catch up in the spring.
Yes, and, I can't wait.
And if you're ever back in these parts, you know, you get in touch with me like you
of
did
course.
The last time.
Yep.
And that was really fun too, you know, to see you here too.
I was traveling a lot for work before, but hopefully I will make my way there just for fun soon. So
yeah. And then, so we will definitely do this. And you see, I knew that we would talk a long time. So
you got to get to your show. You got to get to your gig. I knew it too. So, it's impossible for us to not talk a long time.
So I'm going to continue on the regimen that I was talking about earlier. And and then get ready to sing for the people later on tonight. We had a good time last night.
Oh, good.
And singing also, helps me. It's good for my health.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's, you know, physically good for my health. I don't know. Probably Wynonna. I've never met her. I'd love to meet her.
Oh, you two would totally hit it off. I just know it.
Yeah. And I know that singing has saved her too. You know, I know that music has saved her.
Yep.
And so I'm very glad that you all got to speak. Mm. And so, you know, you can tell Wynonna that I'm a fan and I'd love to meet her someday. So.
Oh yeah. I can't wait for you two to meet. It'll be instant friendship. I know it. All right, Kat. Well, I will let you go, but thanks again and love you lots.
I love you too. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Musings with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Erin Mooring, and the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.